It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Hey, I got to start with Howard Stern and Joe Biden. It's just too delicious, right? I told the Biden campaign, he's got to sit down with Howard. And they picked the other Howard. I just don't get it. Oh, by the way, hope you had a good weekend. We got a lot of good Media Buzz segments online from yesterday's show you might want to check out. And we talked about this a little bit as well. The irony is that Donald Trump used to be one of Howard Stern's best guests. He would come on and, long ago, pre-politics days, they would do locker room talk and, rating women from 1 to 10 and all that. But when Trump got into politics, Stern just absolutely despised him politically. And so he gets Joe Biden for more than an hour. And everyone I talked to said, well, this is great for Biden because Biden got to tell some charming stories, and he was relaxed and just sort of be himself. And Howard was so in the tank for him. I mean, usually when you get somebody, and Howard actually put on a suit for this, and he said he was nervous, but he went on and on and on. If you're a good father to your family, which you are, I know you'll be a good father to the country. I want to thank you for providing a calming influence. At one point, he just recited all of the Biden accomplishments. He said, I can't imagine you're going to lose. He set the president up on, for example, January 6th. And Biden said it was derelict. It was almost criminal. He did nothing. He just sat there and watched. And Stern said, you're the kind of leader I love. We're lucky to have you in the Oval Office. Now, I know there was a little bit of news about, you debate Joe Biden. And Biden said, yeah, but it sounded to me like this was not some announcement he was waiting to make. He was just sort of trying to deflect the question. Trump said he didn't believe it. Well, we'll see. Anyway, if you haven't listened to Howard on Sirius XM, if you just think of him as a shock jock, he is one of the best interviewers in broadcasting. And I've heard him interview Paul McCartney and Bruce Springsteen, but also Katie Couric, Anderson Cooper. I mean, he just gets a lot by doing a lot of research. But with this Biden interview, it was really something. The White House Correspondents' Dinner and all the associated parties this weekend. Lots and lots of people were absorbed by that and posting pictures. I didn't go this year. I've been to many of these. The New York Times doesn't let its reporters go because it would be, participating in something untoward. It does get a little cozy. Well, guess who didn't like listening to Biden and also the comedian Colin Jost? Donald Trump. White House Correspondents' Dinner was really bad. Colin Jost bombed. And Crooked Joe was an absolute disaster. Colin Jost really did bomb. And here's another thing I didn't like about it. So usually when I've gone, when I've watched it on TV, the comedian, there's a section where you go after the press. And the comedian tells a couple jokes about MSNBC, a couple jokes about Fox, one or two jokes about CNN. Colin wasn't having any of that. He took a mild jab at the New York Times. Certainly took some shots at Fox, and then had nothing to say about these other ones. And he was very, very rough on Donald Trump, but he played patty cake with the President Biden, who was sitting right there. And I think that really just, he just seemed to be a standard issue liberal who was only going to take one side. And also, he wasn't funny, which is the worst sin, right? So I made a little joke on the show yesterday, saying something along the lines of what I'm saying right now, and then said, but it doesn't really matter because nobody was looking at him. They were all looking at Scarlett Johansson. I didn't know he was married to Scarlett Johansson, but it was a nice picture of them. And, President Biden was a kind of spicy in going after Trump, saying, age is an issue in this campaign. I'm a grown man running against a six-year-old. And things like, at least my vice president endorsed me. And it's been a hard week for Donald Trump. I guess you could say he's run into stormy weather. I was a little surprised he went there. But he got some laughs. And the 4 years that Trump was president, he never had to go through this routine because he boycotted the dinner. He wanted nothing to do with the press. And a lot of the usual parties were canceled because the president wasn't going to be there. It just sort of lost its luster. And ironically, it was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner in 2011, I believe was the year, either that year or the following year, when President Obama made fun of Trump and the birth certificate business. And Trump was so steamed that I think it had something to do with his decision, even though it didn't come until 2015, to get into politics. I guess you have to say he had the last laugh on that one. Hey, it was a front page story in the New York Times saying Senator J.D. Vance has, put himself high on the VP list. I love all the energy that's expended on the Veep stakes. And in part through his friendship with Donald Trump Jr. So Vance was on Fox News Sunday yesterday, and Shannon Bream asked him, are you being vetted or are you having conversations about joining the ticket? And Vance said, I talk to President Trump a lot. We're very close. I've never spoken to him about being vice president. So I assume this is a lot of media speculation. Of course, if you ask me, I'd have to think seriously about it. So, yeah, I'm not running. He's running. And maybe it's him. I don't know. Let's get down to business here with story number one, which has to do with the campus protest, which I believe is the hottest issue in America right now. 2 weeks ago, you could have said, it's a couple of campuses and some arrests have been made. I mean, over the weekend, another 200 arrests at not just, big, well-known Ivy League schools, but schools ranging from Arizona to Northeastern University. So Washington Post and New York Times take sort of opposite sides in that they're taking different positions, but looking through different lenses. So, for example, former President Donald Trump, other prominent Republicans are seizing on the eruption of campus protests to depict the United States as out of control under President Biden. What is this about? Mostly peaceful demonstrations? There are some peaceful demonstrations. I think that's fine. I'm a free speech guy. But if you set up a bunch of tents in the middle of the quad, you should be arrested if you refuse police orders to leave. And I think the public is swinging more and more in favor of that. We've now had arrests at University of Southern California, where they've canceled graduation. We've had arrests at NYU. We had some initial arrests at Columbia. And then the president, Shafiq, just let them come back and set up tents. And she's been negotiating with them. I'm going to call the NYPD, but she hasn't. They have taken over the campus. Columbia has surrendered. So Washington Post goes on to say that top Republicans have highlighted the anti-Semitic chants that have occurred at some of the protests. They're more than just chants. There's outright harassment of Jewish students to the point that at Columbia, for example, where they've gone to hybrid classes, they've just abandoned the campus where I went to journalism school. And, Dan Abrams said the other day he was embarrassed to have gone to Columbia Law School, and I'm feeling a little bit the same way about the J School. A complicated debate about what constitutes anti-Semitism, when criticism of Israel crosses that line. Oh, come on. It's not that complicated. Anybody can criticize Israel. Israelis criticize Israel, or at least the Netanyahu government. What constitutes anti-Semitism is clear. From the river to the sea. Burn Tel Aviv to the ground. I'm not making this up. These are some of the actual chants. We played some of this on the show yesterday. And you can check that segment out. NYPD, KKK, come on. Numerous Republicans have sought ways to highlight these protests as an example of the country sliding into chaos. How Speaker Mike Johnson, as I told you last week, went to Columbia University. And you know what? You know who should have gone there? President Biden. I know the politics of this are tricky for him because lots of younger voters would call themselves either pro-Palestinian. I would call them pro-Gaza, since that's the ruling force there. But Johnson created a moment by going there. Biden could have done that, but he chose not to. When he wants to go on TV, he does, such as taking a victory lap over the passage of aid, finally, to Israel, to Ukraine, with a pivotal role played by Mike Johnson. University of Texas at Austin, Governor Greg Abbott dispatching more than 100 state troopers. There was a whole lot of arrests there. The rhetoric is heating up. Some senators, including the aforementioned J.D. Vance, calling for college protesters to just be taken to jail. Here's Vance. You don't get to turn our public places into a garbage dump. No civilization should tolerate these encampments. Get rid of them. But go home and take a shower at the end of the day. These encampments are just gross. Wanting to participate in this is a mental illness. And this reminds me of Bill Clinton and Sister Soldier, for those of you who have forgotten or are too young to remember. 1992 campaign, Sister Soldier was a activist who said, why don't we just take a week, a black activist, and kill white people? And when Bill was talking to Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition, he said, you know, if you just sort of reverse the races, I would think David Duke was talking. He took on his own base. And it was a big moment for him. And we still have the phrase, Sister Soldier moment, to this day, decades later. But, you know, the left wing of the Democratic Party, a lot of them are anti-Israel. See Israel as either a force for evil, a practicing genocide, or whatever you want to say. And the only thing that Biden has said on camera, and this is all very deliberate, was this shouted question from a reporter, where you barely could make out his answer because there's a lot of background noise. Oh, I denounce the anti-Semitism, but also people don't understand what the Palestinians are doing. That's been interpreted different ways. So, again, this is being made in this piece as, let's have a debate about what's proper and not proper. It's crystal clear. I understand. First of all, I'm a free speech guy. I think anybody, pro-Palestinian, pro or anti whatever, have the right to peacefully demonstrate. But you got to do it in the area that's set up. You can't just take over the Quad and put up the tents again. Democrats have voiced a range of views on the legitimacy of the protests. Biden has sought a balance. Yeah, so there's no message there at all. Now here's the New York Times looking at it from the other end. Nearly 7 months after the Israel-Hamas war began, the demonstrations convulsing college campuses nationwide are exposing fresh tensions within the Democratic Party over how to balance free speech protections and support for Gazans, with concerns that some Jewish Americans are raising about anti-Semitism. So this looks at it within the politics of the Democratic Party. From New York to LA to Atlanta to Austin, a surge in student activism has manifested in protest encampments and other demonstrations during significant police crackdowns, sometimes appearing to attract outside agitators. Now, there's no question about that. The moment also carries political risk for a party that has harnessed promises of stability and normalcy to win elections. Here's a Democratic strategist quoted as saying, the real question is, can Democrats again portray themselves as the steady hand at the helm? Things that create national chaos like this make that harder to do. Now, you could argue that when it comes to denouncing lawlessness, Donald Trump has his own problems. Obviously, he's on trial right now in a very openly political and the least important of the four criminal cases. The Hamas-led attack on Israel on October 7th, the Israeli military response that has killed more than 30,000 people, the fight over American policy toward Israel has been especially pronounced on the left. And by the way, I sympathize with not getting enough aid to Gaza, with the beginnings of a famine there, that Israel has not done a good job, that the U.S. has pressured the Israelis. But especially after U.S. forces, ordered into action by the Biden administration, helped protect Israel from that bombardment by Iran of over 300 missiles and drones, I mean, Biden was in a stronger position to do something. And there's a lot of parallels to, particularly at Columbia in 1968, very violent demonstrations, somebody was taken hostage, anti-Vietnam War protests. And this Democratic strategist, I believe, no, another one, said, history often ends up vindicating those who call for peace early. I think more and more members of Congress will start to show up at these events. By the way, some Democratic congressmen went to Columbia as well. But there's a difference between harassing and intimidating Jewish students, between saying, and we had this on tape too, that there will be 100 October 7th. There will be 1,000. There will be 10,000. It will never end. Now, I've watched this video many times, and it never ceases to outrage me. Columbia student Kaimani James played it on the show yesterday. Last January, he went before Columbia officials, and he said, the existence of Zionism, the existence of Zionists, that is people who support the right of Jewish folks to have a state of their own, it's all antithetical to peace. And so, yes, I feel very comfortable calling for those people to die. He said they don't deserve to live. And what was the reaction of Columbia officials? Nothing. They knew this. We didn't. No outrage, no penalty. Let this guy say what he wants. Well, he's now a leader of the protesters. And when somebody resurfaced this tape, suddenly Columbia is putting out statements. This is unacceptable. We can't tolerate this. He's been barred from the campus. Not suspended, not expelled, barred from the campus. Well, better than nothing. But you're going to kind of wonder, what took so long? Zionists don't deserve to live. These are exact quotes. Now, he put out a kind of a non-apology. Well, I believe in the sanctity of life, but I still believe that Israel's responsible for genocide. He compared Zionists to white supremacists and Nazis. These are the same people. James said, be grateful that I'm not just going out and murdering Zionists. Oh, thank you so much for your tolerance.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow Podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
All right, story two, no trial today for Donald Trump in New York, but interesting take here in this New York Times piece. Donald Trump is a thrice married man accused of covering up a sex scandal with a porn star after the world heard him brag about grabbing women by their genitals, the Access Hollywood tape. But when Trump's lawyers introduced him to a jury in Manhattan, they said he's a husband, he's a father, and he's a person just like you and just like me. that reflected Trump's input. And this is the point of this piece. Other lawyers might concede the personal failings of their client to get to the shortcomings of the indictment and the shortcoming of the prosecution's case, along the lines of, my client may not be a nice guy, but he is no criminal. But that tactic not available to the Trump defense because, at least in the way the Times looks at it, Trump is allergic to anything but praise from the people around him. So his legal strategy mirrors his political talking points. Absolute persecution, unjust assault on his character. And I know millions of Americans who support him believe that. Now, Trump says over and over and over again, no crime. His top lawyer, Todd Blanche, followed that by asking jurors, what on earth is a crime? Built a very large, successful company. Now, they have used some conventional tactics because the heart of this is falsifying expense records, having to do with, as we talked about a lot last week, Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen, Karen McDougal. And when Cohen testifies, I don't know when that is, I mean, his credibility, having acknowledged lying, having served time in prison, is going to come under fierce attack. That's why David Pecker was valuable to the prosecution, because he seemed just to be sticking to the facts and didn't have any animus, or didn't appear to have any animus against Donald Trump. Said Trump was his mentor. In private, Trump has dressed down lawyers in several of his cases, even questioning their entire strategy just minutes before they were set to appear in court. At the two recent civil trials, he badgered lawyers, directing them to object at inopportune moments. Once exhorted his lawyer, Alina Haba, to get up, meaning to object, as he banged her arm with the back of his hand. Those cases ended in defeat. So, basically, it's a look at Trump legal strategy as dictated by the client, but who is, after all, the defendant here and gets to have a say in what the strategy is, whether it's successful or not, in the very blue borough of Manhattan, where most of the jurors are probably against Donald Trump, though they have promised the judge that they can be fair. We'll see when the trial, it'll be more clear, I think, as the trial gets a little bit more underway. Related story, number three. Conservative lawyer and media personality Christina Bobb became one of the latest members of Trump's inner circle to be charged in connection with overturning the 2020 presidential election results. It became clear she would not have to give up her day job. She is the senior counsel to the RNC's election integrity team. And yet she has been charged, along with Rudy Giuliani, along with Mark Meadows and a bunch of others, in Arizona. So, despite the fact that she's been indicted, I don't know, like, wouldn't the optics make it good for her to step aside from that RNC job? At least as far as election integrity is concerned? Well, not according to Trump spokesman Stephen Chung. Another example of Democrats' weaponization of the legal system. Christina Bobb is a former Marine Corps officer who served our nation and the president with distinction, the Democrat platform for 2024. If you can't beat them, try to throw them in jail. Now, Christina Bobb worked for OAN. And what always fascinated me about that is she wasn't a commentator who just defended Trump. She was a reporter, or she was packaged as a reporter and always defended Donald Trump and ended up going to work for Donald Trump. She volunteered to help the Trump legal team after the election and became an advocate for false claims of election fraud. This whole case in Arizona has to do with fake electors or an alternative slate of electors. And she wrote a book, Stealing the Vote, Inside Story of the 2020 Election and What It Means for 2024. She also is involved in the classified documents case, because she signed a document on Trump's behalf as one of his lawyers, saying she'd been told a diligent search was conducted for boxes of records shipped to Mar-a-Lago. And I guess it wasn't all that diligent, since the famous raid on the Palm Beach complex found more classified documents. Let's see. She also huddled it with Giuliani at the Willard Hotel, January 6, 2021, as that mob was storming the Capitol. Okay. This is an interesting twist. Story four. Donald Trump met privately yesterday morning for hours with Ron DeSantis. They've had chilly relations for years now. Now, allies brokered this meeting, hoping to work out a detente, because even after DeSantis dropped out of the race, and all the sources here are unnamed, this is the Washington Post version, I think might have been the first to break it, DeSantis agreed during these several hours to help Donald Trump, as in help him raise money. Meeting was friendly. DeSantis has built a wide network of wealthy patrons, particularly in Florida, but elsewhere too, that would be valuable to Donald Trump. And the incentive for DeSantis is, it's just not tenable for the Republican governor of Florida to continue to have a strained relation with Trump if he's going to have any political future outside of Florida. He is widely viewed as weakened after the shellacking he took. There's a real estate broker in Florida who knows both Trump and DeSantis, and he brokered the meeting. DeSantis posted a video message. It's clear to me that a majority of Republican primary voters want to give Donald Trump another chance. They watched his presidency get stymied by relentless resistance, and they see Democrats using lawfare to this day to attack him. But DeSantis hasn't spent one day campaigning for Trump. In fact, he's continued to take jabs at him. He's still steamed about how they treated him during the primary. You remember Ron DeSanct. Oh, that's right. Trump has retired that nickname. DeSantis saying a couple months ago, I think he's got people in his inner circle who were part of our orbit years ago that we fired. I'll get to that in a second. And some of them just have an axe to grind. At the time, Chris LaCivita, top aide to Trump, called DeSantis a sad little man. DeSantis is widely loathed inside Trump's orbit. But, you know, I mean, look at all the people Trump has forgiven. I mean, all the things that Lindsey Graham said about him, Ted Cruz said about him, you name it. If he can form an alliance with you that's in his interest, he will. And DeSantis, you know, is looking at 2028. I don't know if he has a shot at 2028 after what happened, but he certainly doesn't have a shot unless, and this is true whether Trump wins or loses, he doesn't have Trump as a opponent.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Now, story number five is a reference to the person who was working for DeSantis, then got pushed out. There's this incredibly well-researched profile in Politico of a woman named Susie Wiles. And she cooperated with this profile. She is totally on Team Trump. She is seen as, I mean, even people who don't like her say she's brilliant at working the press, working the system, doing it with no fingerprints, doing it behind the scenes, spreading narratives without having her name attached. Here's how it starts out. She's a mother. She's a grandmother. Turns 67 next month. She's worked in politics for 40 years. Presidents, mayors, governors, members of Congress. She's a soft-spoken Episcopalian. She's a self-described moderate. She's a savvy operator, capable manager, a spotter and cultivator of up-and-coming talent, a maker and keeper of relationships with reporters. Sounds like I should get to know her. A sly, subtle shaper of stories that help frame the political currents. She worked for Rick Scott, Trump, DeSantis, Trump again. Quote, Ashley Walker, Democratic strategist. She was already the most successful, well-respected brand operative in Florida by a long mile, and now she's cementing that brand. Former Republican chairman of Florida, current state senator, the most valuable political advisor in the country. But just briefly, because this is a very long piece and absolutely worth your time. Her father, I have no way of knowing this, is Pat Summerall. Pat Summerall was an NFL football player. And later, I mean, even if the name doesn't ring a bell, he became a big play-by-play man in the NFL. You'd know his voice. You'd know his face because he's just been on TV that much. Pat Summerall was also, according to Summerall's own account in a book that he wrote, so this is not unnamed sources taking a shot at him, an alcoholic who was not there for his kids, by his own admission, just failed them as a father. Not just because he was on the road a lot. He just, like, wasn't that interested. Totally kicks his own butt on this. And, obviously, one of his kids, Susie Wiles, that made for a difficult childhood for her. She doesn't hide that. And because Summerall himself grew up with parents that were cold and didn't give him much love, she then is a perfect fit for Donald Trump. She recognizes his flaws, but she knows how to deal with difficult men. Now, Trump doesn't even drink, so the alcoholic comparison doesn't hold any water to switch beverages. But the idea that she, because of her famous father, who, by the way, admitted having an affair with another woman for 17 years until he finally divorced Susie's mother, is just, you know, you can believe it, not believe it, but it's fleshed out with a lot of reporting. And so I bring this up because both, it's one of the best profiles I've read, whether you're pro-Trump, anti-Trump, pro-Susie, anti-Susie, whatever. And also because of the reference in the previous segment to somebody who was pushed out. DeSantis apparently, I don't know. He owed his election in part to Susie Wiles and then pushed her out. Says something about the way the game of politics is played, which is hardball. Thanks for listening. Always enjoy knowing you're out there. See you tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.